So, Berto, did you see the movie Searching?
I saw it last night, man.
Would you like it?
Oh, I really enjoyed it.
Let's talk about
it.
Yeah,
let's do it.
This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I'm a therapist and a professor.
My name is Humberto Castañeda. I run a site where you can broadcast live some video of yourself.
So I gave it initially I gave this an 8 out of 10. And then after I thought about it some more, I downgraded it to a 7.
And I understand why. I gave it an 8 as well. Let me put it this way. I don't know all the backdrop. You probably know more background about the director and stuff like that, which we'll go into. But my sense was like this was a bit of a passion project from someone that's not a veteran director or something. But I loved the new storytelling style, the general content, the twists and turns. But certainly there's a level of sloppiness to it that I would have liked to improve on.
When did the sloppiness, was it throughout the whole movie?
There is a little bit throughout. Like some of the acting was great, some of the acting was not great.
Yeah.
And some of the interactions felt very natural, some of the interactions did not feel natural. And I can go into specifics, but overall, I give it an 8 for the experience I had, but I could certainly poke a lot of holes into the quality of all the scenes. Okay. You know?
So I'm going to try not to spoil it. So let's try.
Oh, okay.
But I don't think we have to spoil it to talk about it. I think there's a lot of things we could say. So for people who don't know, Searching is a movie starring John Cho. If you don't know who John Cho is, he's Harold and Kumar. Harold and Kumar. He's also Sulu in the new Star Trek movies.
So he gets typecast into searching for things, right?
Yeah.
One time it's White Castle burgers. Sometimes you're searching for Spock.
Sometimes you're searching for your daughter. So Searching is a classic suspense thriller, but it takes place entirely on a computer screen.
Yeah.
So John Cho, he calls his daughter, and when you're watching the movie, you see the FaceTime. You don't see him looking at his phone. You just see what the screen sees.
You know, I didn't actually realize until you pointed out just now that it is all from a computer screen.
You didn't realize that.
I mean, I knew that it was all video chats and things. But in my head, there was probably still a few scenes that were a third-person camera.
Nope.
No.
No.
It was all in the screen.
Yeah. And so it's an ambitious movie in that respect, in that it's trying to follow this convention that's never, I think there's another movie that came out a few years ago that tried to do a similar thing. I don't know the name.
Well, and then there's a horror movie that just came out like that where it's a deep dark web or deep web or something.
Okay, maybe that was what I was thinking of.
No, but there was one even before that.
Oh, okay. There's
been attempts at doing this kind of thing,
Right, but I think that this is the first semi-mainstream movie that did it, and I think he did it pretty well. We can get more into that later, but so the premise is that John Cho is a dad. His wife dies,
cancer.
In the prelude to the movie that you see the wife dying, and then it's him and his daughter. And his daughter is in high school, and she's like a senior in high school or something. And one night she doesn't come home. And he can't.
I think she's 10th grade, isn't she?
Well, she drives a car.
Oh yeah, you're right.
So she can't. So you know, 10th grade,
okay,
maybe.
Okay, right.
My point is, she's older, high school. She's not like dependent on him. She can go out at night, and she doesn't come home one night, and it wasn't anyway. And so then he tries to track her down, and the way he does this is he breaks into her laptop and starts contacting,
getting on all her Facebook, her Instagram, her everything, and immediately he realizes how little he knows about her life at this point,
right? And that's kind of the theme, is like he's realizing that he, you know, in the loss of his wife and her mother, he's been a little distant.
Yep.
So the movie was directed by Anish Changanti. It's his first film, and he used to work for Google.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so he retired from Google.
So he was a Silicon Valley alum.
Yeah, and I believe South Asian.
This must have influenced his idea of all computer stuff.
Right, so he's very familiar probably with UI and stuff.
Right.
And it stars John Cho, and he has been in a lot of movies. Can you name anything that he's been in over the years, TV shows? So we said Harold and Kumar and Star Trek.
Well, I don't know.
So
I've only known him from that stuff.
Yeah, so he's basically been hardworking for the past 25 years. He's my age. I think he's just a little older. I'm not sure. But a lot of the stuff he's been in has been sort of real secondary. It wasn't until Harold and Kumar that he that was the first movie.
Was he in 24 at one point? Or
maybe.
Homeland or something?
Yeah, so he's been in a lot of TV shows. I don't have his full list here, but he was in a movie, Yellow, which focused on Asians in 1997. He was in Felicity. He was in American Pie.
Oh, yeah, I remember him in that.
American Beauty, which I don't remember him from. He's in a movie called Better Luck Tomorrow, which is sort of another Asian movie, and I remember seeing that. I remember giving it a 6 out of 10, 2002.
I saw that one, actually.
Okay. He was in How I Met Your Mother, at least.
Yes, right.
Okay. He was in Total Recall.
The new Total Recall? I haven't seen that.
Yeah. I saw it. It wasn't too bad. Okay. I mean, it wasn't, you know, as good as the first one. He's been in BoJack Horseman, New Girl. He's in upcoming Star Trek. There's an upcoming Star Trek movie, by the way.
So he works a lot.
Yeah. He's been in Drunk History. He played William Shakespeare, which is funny. He's been – do you ever watch that, Drunk History?
Yeah. I haven't seen that one, though.
He's been on College Humor.
I've seen him in some skits.
Okay. So, yeah, I think he's –
I like him.
He's a hilarious guy, you know, good actor. I just – you know, and, you know, fellow Asian – American, and
he's someone I've always thought, oh, I'd like to be friends with that person.
Yeah, he seems like a good guy.
Yeah.
So what do you think he got on Rotten Tomatoes?
Well, I kind of cheated because I saw, but it was like 95% or something. 92%, okay.
Okay, so what do you think, again, without...
Which I was surprised about.
Okay. So, before we get into the good and the bad, I just want to point out that, again, this is a movie that has a limited scope. You know, like some movies where it's just like the whole movie takes place in an elevator.
Right.
The whole movie takes place on a number of screens. Like it mainly is on his laptop and his phone.
And you see, because he's doing video calls. So sometimes you see other environment. And that's what tricked me a little bit.
Right.
Is that, and this is really to the movie's credit. For example, when he's looking at photographs, well, sometimes you're seeing a video or a photograph in the outdoors. Sometimes he's video calling someone who's in a totally different location.
Right.
So my mind played that trick on me where I'm like, no, there were other locales. Like,
right.
No, it was all on the TV.
Yeah, and it was really inventive because there were times when, you know, the writer wanted to show him sleeping, for example.
Right.
And what they did was they made it so that he basically accidentally left his video chat app on with his laptop on, and so we, as looking at the screen, can see that he is actually sleeping.
Oh, and actually, that one's actually what would happen technically if an incoming FaceTime call is coming on your screen, because it shows you your camera feed before you answer, so you see what you look like. That was kind of like, okay, I could see how that could happen.
Right,
like not all video apps do that, but some video apps do that.
Right, that was the thing. It was like, not all apps do this, but you could see one doing that.
I did just realize there was a scene that couldn't have been on his computer where there was an interrogation happening.
Right.
But it was still on a computer monitor.
Right. So sometimes they go to another screens or just like a random...
But it's not a direct view.
It's sort of like, I guess one way to look at it, it's like if a hacker was watching this situation,
right.
What would the hacker see?
Right.
That's because then the hacker might go, ooh, what's going on in the news?
That's right.
And then he watches the news.
Blair Witch was a little bit like this, except they weren't showing us what was on a computer screen. They were showing us what was filmed footage.
Right.
But it was only the filmed footage.
I hadn't thought about that. Yeah. So let's go through all the different limited scope movies. So Blair Witch, I'm going to add that to the list.
There's My Dinner with Andre.
Good. What else?
There is the, Four Rooms.
Four Rooms?
I mean, it's not one room, but it's four rooms.
Okay. Is that the one in the hotel?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's on the borderline because that's like still four different rooms. Okay. It's four different directors in four different rooms.
Does something like Saw count? Because
I don't know. I haven't seen
Saw. I mean, the first Saw, the main line of the action takes place in the same torture room, but you do see flashbacks.
Yeah, flashbacks. I think flashbacks are allowed as long as it's pre...
So I'd say Saw, because mostly. Because
the whole thing is normal movies,
yeah,
they skip around. Hospital, home, street, car chase, airplane. Like, you know, it's pretty rare. Like, Snakes on a Plane is probably another good movie, right? Because that probably takes... It's been a while since I've seen it, but that probably takes place at least mostly in a plane, right?
Right.
But a movie like... a Castaway with Tom Hanks, that's not limited scope because it it starts in the regular world. And
Well, how about 170 hours or whatever it was?
Right, 127
hours.
Kind of. You could say for a good
most of it, he's stuck
in the middle. But I don't know. There's a lot of other better examples where it's so clear that the director was like, I'm going to keep this in one spot. Devil,
elevator.
Yeah, the elevator.
Yep, yeah.
M. Night wrote that.
Yeah, it's an okay one, but
I liked it. I gave it 7 out of 10. Because the reason why I gave it 7 instead of say 5 was it's hard to make a movie with 5 people in an elevator, for an hour and a half.
Yeah,
like that's hard. And the fact that they pulled it off and I was watching it was like, wow, this is hard to do.
Phone Booth.
Phone Booth is another one. Colin Farrell, I gave 4 out of 10. I didn't really like that.
No, it was not good, but they did do the Phone Booth.
That's right. Cube from 1997.
Yes, Cube, right. I was going to say, I couldn't remember the name of it, ironically, because I thought it was like The Room or something, but it was Cube.
Right.
What about The Room?
So no, because that eventually, you're thinking Room.
Room.
I
haven't seen it. Don't
spoil. Oh, okay. Well, okay. So it doesn't entirely take place. Buried. 2010, Ryan Reynolds, where he's buried in a coffin.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't seen it, but I know which one it is.
And he just has like his cell phone, I gave that an 8 out of 10. I really like that movie. That, a movie like that, the ending, you just can never... It's similar to Searching. It's like, it's thrillers, suspense movies. It's really hard to write an ending that is super satisfying.
Sure.
So anyway, Buried had a similar Rear Window.
Right.
Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh my God. I can't believe I didn't say that one right off the bat.
1954. I'm going to include Reservoir Dogs, Quentin Tarantino, because the vast majority of that movie takes place in that warehouse.
And it is known for that. So,
right. And there's flashbacks.
Yeah. That's why I'm saying Saw should count.
Yeah.
Because Saw takes place in this bathroom, the shitty bathroom for 80% of the movie.
Okay. So let's put that in like a semi-limited scope. Because even Reservoir Dogs, it's like when they go to, Mr. Orange, there's a whole storyline with him.
Right.
Hateful Eight, of course.
Well, I was going to bring up Hateful Eight, but that one's got a lot of outdoor scenery at the beginning.
Yeah,
and then
so it's in that gray zone.
It's in the gray zone.
Yeah, but a vast majority of the movie is in one room at this, the stopover point. You got 12 Angry Men.
Yes.
Which the vast majority takes place in the jury, all-white male room. 1957, Henry Fonda.
What about, I want to say Death of a Salesman?
I don't know.
It's all in his house.
Have they movie-ized that play?
Yeah, with a long time ago with Dustin Hoffman. It's really good.
Misery?
Oh, of course. I mean, at least, so we can make exceptions for, a lot of times there's a setup at the beginning.
And then?
Then they get to the location and they stay there the rest of
the time. The Mist takes place.
I haven't seen that one.
In a department store, I believe.
Okay.
For most of it. So wait, you haven't seen The Mist?
No.
Don't you hear about how The Mist has the most devastating ending?
Tell me.
Am I thinking of the same movie?
It might be. I've never seen it. I want to see it.
You got it. There are. Whenever anyone brings up a
twist
movie
ending,
devastating.
Oh, devastating. Okay.
Like, Irreversible.
Oh, my God. That's got the devastating beginning.
Right. So it's not that bad, and it's not obviously in that tone. But if I remember right, The Mist, if that's the movie, the ending is just the characters have to make choices that you later on go, Oh, no. Okay. You know, it's just like all the right. worst.
Okay, I have to watch that. So what about this one? This one probably doesn't count, but The Touch of the Medusa.
I don't know.
It's Richard Burton. And the whole movie, he's in a coma in a hospital.
Okay.
But you see a lot of other scenes because there's flashbacks.
Tape, Richard Linklater. Have you seen this movie?
I don't think so.
The whole movie takes place in a hotel room, like a small hotel room. Ethan Hawke, Robert Sean Leonard, and Uma Thurman.
No, I have not seen that.
It's a great movie.
And so, I love Richard Linklater.
So basically what happens is these three friends from college meet up like 10 years later. And, you know, it's like a reunion of sorts. But then slowly over time, you start realizing there's a bigger story to this. You know what I mean?
So The Storm, what's it called? Isn't it called The Storm or the Big Chill?
The Big Chill?
Is it The Big Chill?
I don't know.
Where's the one? They're all trapped because there's this big storm. They're all in the same house the whole
movie. There's another movie like that too that I'm forgetting where there's this belief that outside of this, so they're having like a dinner party.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's the parabola or...
Anyway.
It is kind of like about physics, right? Like something's happened, like there's like a alternate timeline or something.
I don't remember.
Okay.
Hard Candy, 2005. Have you seen this movie? Patrick Wilson, Ellen Page.
No.
So Ellen Page, young Ellen Page.
No, I haven't seen this one.
Young. I gave this movie a 9 out of 10. I gave Tape a 9 out of 10 too, by the way. Hard Candy, 9 out of 10. Ellen Page plays this girl who was sexually assaulted, and she kidnaps the guy.
Oh.
And the whole movie is her essentially torturing this guy in someone's house. Maybe it could be his house.
So revenge, torture porn.
Right. And there's a scene that it's like, whoa. Locke with Tom Hardy. Have you seen that movie?
No.
7 out of 10. The whole movie takes place in his car. So he's driving from one location to another, and he is calling people on his phone.
Okay.
And the whole movie, that's the whole movie.
Okay.
Him just driving from one place to the next, and you never see the other people. You just see him talking to these people.
Oh, okay. Well, what about Moon?
I don't know.
No,
I don't think that fits because it's, you know, it's definitely isolating, but he's all over the moon. He's in several different rooms.
Mars? Or was it called? The one with Matt Damon?
Yeah, that also.
Yeah.
The one I love, Mark Duplass and Elizabeth Moss. That's an interesting movie. It takes place in this. I think they're babysitting a house while someone's gone. The Shallows, Blake Lively, speaking of Ryan.
You could argue that all of the original Star Trek TV series was like this.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You get a sense of like, that doesn't really make a lot of sense.
I know, but you know, they're always like in this, mostly they're in the bridge.
Right.
And they have a screen that shows them the aliens. That's mostly what happens. Every now and then they go down to the planet.
Yeah. 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Right.
John Goodman.
I was going to bring that one up.
Free Fire with Brie Larson. The vast majority of the movie takes place in this one warehouse. This movie, the first half an hour, I was in it. I was like, oh, I see. They're trying to do kind of like a Quentin Tarantino-esque style. And this movie had so much potential, and it just became so boring. Essentially, there's an hour where like basically you have like at least two different factions of people in this warehouse. They've all been injured. And there's some people who are dead.
Okay.
So essentially, there's this deal that goes wrong. Everyone starts firing guns, and then this protracted, long-ass standoff happens.
Right.
And it's not interesting. The characters aren't – everyone's yelling at each other. And it's just an hour of them lying on the ground behind a random piece of cover and trying to shoot each other. It was just so dumb. It was like one of the dumbest movies. I gave it a 2 out of 10.
Oh, Mother!
Right. I was just about to say Darren Aronofsky takes place in the same house. You know, definitely limited.
I mean, there's different rooms, but
also All Is Lost with Robert Redford, where he's on that boat. It's just him on this whole movie. Robert Redford.
What?
He's the only one in this. It just came out 5 years ago.
Whoa.
He's on a sailboat, and then he.
Is this based on a true story?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
But he has, like, his boat gets injured by, like, debris, And then it's him trying to survive, essentially. Okay. And you get the sense like he is in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, wow.
And so the whole movie, there's not another actor. He doesn't call anyone on the phone. It's just him in this
boat
trying to survive. And I gave it a 6 out of 10. It's good.
I mean, so I guess there's things that don't quite count, even though it's one person isolated. Like the one where he goes to Alaska, or like he hikes out into the wilderness.
Right.
And dies out there.
Yeah, it's interesting that the Robert Redford one counts because it's a man on a boat whole movie, same small boat.
Right.
But you take someone
like
alone,
the Revenant.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Okay, so let's take a break and then let's talk more about what was good about this movie. What do you say?
Let's do it.
Okay, we're back from the break, and as I always say, please become a patron of the podcast by going to patreon.com. If you like this podcast, that is the way you can prove to us that you actually like what we're doing.
Because you deserve it.
So this is a movie that... So when I saw Crazy Rich Asians...
Which I still haven't seen.
I was, I got there for the previews, which I try to avoid, but I was sitting there through the previews. And I was starting to wonder, like, you know how they make previews for movies... based on what the movie is.
Right.
If it's a horror movie, then there's other horror movie trailers. If it's a rom-com, you have rom-com trailers. If it's a hero movie, you have hero movie trailers. Well, when I went to Crazy Rich Asians, I was like, well, what are they going to do? Like,
sure.
Because there's not, you know, what? How are the marketers, you know, on, you know, what do they call it? Madison Avenue. what are they going to see? And What I realized was they saw it as essentially just a non-white movie, and so all the trailers were mainly black movies.
Wow.
Yeah. So like 9 out of 10 of the trailers were just any movie that focused on black people.
Huh.
And I was like, that's fucking depressing. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
That's like we get lumped in with black people. It's just like, well, you're not white. So, but there was one Asian American movie, which was Searching.
Which, by the way, when you said, hey, have you seen Searching? I didn't know what you were talking about. I had seen the poster, and I knew it was from Harold, and I saw the poster recently, but I didn't know what it was. Once the movie started, I'm like, oh, I saw this preview ages ago.
Oh, interesting. Right. So this movie is interesting in that in the same few months, we have two movies that focus on Asians in a way that doesn't really focus on Asians, you know, like the two movies are just, you know, Crazy Rich Asians is just a rom-com and it just happens to be focused. It just happens to be Asian people.
Right.
And racism against Asians is, I think, only talked about in the very first scene.
Right.
And then after that, it's not really discussed.
And in this movie, it's completely irrelevant.
Right. Because it is. Like, I'm Asian American, and I don't fucking walk around in my life just constantly, like, thinking about the fact that I'm Asian American. It's like...
The only thing you could point to is maybe the piano playing.
Well, there are certain things that are particular to Asians. Like, you know how to use, you know... A 45-year-old Asian guy is probably going to be better with technology and laptops than someone who's white, just in general. The piano playing.
Or like you have your kid in music lessons.
Right.
That's a stereotype.
Yeah. But, you know, if you swapped out everything and it was just a white
dad
and a white kid, there you wouldn't have noticed anything. Nope. So that was kind of – oh, and the kimchi dish was also
– sure.
You know.
But, you know, you could have had everything identical.
Yeah.
Except maybe it's not a kimchi dish.
But you could even have kimchi – like you could see
– sure.
You know, like you
– I mean, it was not like you would see that scene and be like, what? No one would cook a dish with kimchi nowadays.
Yeah. Like you've probably had kimchi in your house.
Yes. I mean, I bought kimchi and it stunk up the place.
It always stinks up the place. And honestly, me having kimchi is weird because it's Korean and I'm Japanese. Did I ever tell you about the time I went to Epcot and I went to the Japan, you know, have you been to Epcot?
Yeah, oh, I love Epcot.
Yeah. So if you haven't been to Epcot, it's like a giant circle and around the circle are different countries.
Yeah.
And Japan is one of the countries. And so you go into the Japan thing and there's like a, it's like Expo where they'll...
Yeah. And they have the equivalent of an Uwajimaya store, essentially, with like all the...
And then they have a restaurant, Japanese restaurant, that you can eat in. And you go in there. And so I went in there. And when I eat at Japanese restaurants in Seattle, I will often order kimchi to go along with my meal because it's just kind of a good...
And they serve it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Japanese restaurants in Seattle, a lot of times kimchi... Okay. In fact, I'm Japanese American and... grew up with kimchi everywhere. It's just like, I don't know if Japanese people in Japan, well, no, they do. Japanese people in Japan will have kimchi dishes.
Okay.
Anyway.
But and they ferment other things too.
But yeah, but it's a Korean, kimchi is right. Korean. And so I'm in the restaurant and I'm like, can I order some kimchi? And she's like, and she's Japanese. Uh-huh. She's like, sir, kimchi is Korean.
Oh my
and
gosh.
I'm like,
cringe.
I'm like, yeah, I know, but I just thought maybe you'd have kimchi. She's like, oh, this is a Japanese restaurant.
Oh.
You know,
and you
she was Asian splaining.
Yeah, and you can't like, because anything you say at that point, they'll just assume you're now just backpedaling.
Yeah, right. Because basically, she's thinking, oh. You don't understand. Japan and Korea are
two different things.
Two different countries. Yeah. And I'm like.
And even if you said, no, you don't understand. In where I'm from, I've had kimchi in a Japanese restaurant. I'd be like, yeah, but that doesn't mean it's Japanese.
Right. You know? It's like, I know. I grew up eating kimchi sandwiches. Come on. Okay. So, John Cho, let's talk about his performance. What do you think?
Yes. I actually thought he was one of the best parts of the movie for me.
Yeah, he has to carry so much of this.
Definitely, right? And of course, usually a protagonist, you're chosen on purpose. But like, he actually was believable in his moments, in his anguish, in his self doubt, and a lot of times you don't even see his face, right? Because he's like just manipulating the computer. But they did some clever things, which are not so much his acting as much as the directing, but they did some clever things where there were pauses or he would write something and then delete it. But really, when we were watching him act, because there were some scenes when he was interacting with, there was one scene where he was interacting with his
brother.
And there was one scene where he was interacting with the detective where I actually didn't buy as much the performance of the detective and the brother.
Totally.
But I definitely bought his performance.
Yeah, it was very believable. And as I was trying to figure out why I liked his performance so much. And I think it's because he did it in a subtle way.
Yeah.
Like, it's tempting. You know, John Cho, he has never been – you know, he did Harold and Kumar.
Right.
These are – you know, big movies for him is a big deal, but he shared the bill,
right?
And they're sort of joke movies, you know. So he, you know, but this is his first dramatic movie where he is by far the star.
Yep.
And you could argue like 95% of the movie is him on the screen, and no one else. Like
right.
It's just him talking. Anyway, so it's tempting to be like, I finally arrived. I'm going to show people what I can.
I went to Juilliard.
Yeah. And, but he doesn't do that, you know? So him and the director, Anish, they crafted a really, you know, very subtle, believable.
Right.
Because for me and you, we know John Cho. We've seen him in Harold and Kumar. We've seen all these other things. And particularly for me, as an Asian American, paying attention to other Asian Americans in pop culture. So, you know, it's hard for me to look at him as a dad, and pretty quickly I bought into it, you know? So I thought that was good.
And was this the director's first movie or is
it
okay.
First movie.
So that's what I was saying. I got that sense from it. Like, okay, there it's a little sloppy here and there, but wow, what a first good movie, you know? Like what a good first movie.
Right. That's what a lot of reviewers are saying is that it's a little sloppy, but for a first movie, awesome. Yeah. And I can't wait to see what else he could do. What'd you think of the computer simulation?
Meaning?
Well, what the representation. Because you know,
everything
they had
through
the
computer.
They had to a graphics guy.
Oh, yeah, of course. Because they couldn't actually have all the people in the Facebook and stuff like
that. Yeah, they had to simulate.
You know,
they had to simulate actual computer stuff.
It felt completely it felt great.
Right.
Because a lot of movies, especially when you see like stuff on computers,
yeah.
it's a mess, right?
Right?
Especially if it's a hacker movie, that's the yeah. worst. But this, it was Windows, it had Facebook, it had Instagram, it had all the things. It looked, they took a few liberties with some of the functionality of the UCast app.
Right.
And then there are a couple of things where
Well, because UCast doesn't exist.
Well, even if it, I don't know if that one does, but there are things like
no,
that.
No, it doesn't.
You can,
UCast.
Okay.
So
UCast doesn't, but there are things where you can broadcast and
right.
people can
comment.
Right.
So it was a fake site from YouNow. There's a thing called YouNow. But
so it's like that.
But that was one of the things I didn't really get. It's like they use Facebook. They use Windows. Yeah. They use Apple OS.
Yeah.
They use, Instagram and Facebook. You know, they don't yeah. pussyfoot around that. But when it comes to YouNow,
well,
they changed it to UCast.
I have a reason why that probably was. I don't know if it'll give something away though.
Well, do you think they would get sued because?
Because if you think about one of the pivotal things in the movie, happens only in that app,
right?
And I think that could maybe that if there was that company that like yo we don't support that or something.
But it seems so dumb because to me, if I was YouNow, I'd be like. No one knows about us, so
sure.
And this movie doesn't paint sure. that app in a bad light.
Yeah.
If
Who
anything,
knows?
It makes it look.
Or maybe
like,
they just needed to take. Here's another possibility. It is possible that because there are certain things they had to do, like it saved every broadcast and it kept all the comments happening while so they might have had to do things where they needed just the right UI and the app wasn't exactly like
okay,
that.
I can see that. But they totally were able to make all the other apps work for the screen.
Yeah, yeah.
So So I was just confused by that. I was like, why would you, with that one thing, that's the
right.
one that you fake?
So I
Which
found
is annoying because it's like, it takes you out of the game. You know, like, imagine, just let's take it another level. Instead of Facebook, it was called like, Face Smile or People Book.
Okay.
And everyone acted like People Book
right.
was the big app that everyone used.
I agree with that. However, I guess I know of many others like that one, and I didn't know whether or not that one was or wasn't. So for me, I just assumed it's something I hadn't heard of, but it's okay. like one of the ones that I've heard. So.
Yeah, so you brought up, they used actual OSs, and, the hacker movies are bad. Yeah, and this is one thing that I never understand. Like, I was like, hate watching CSI a few months ago. This was actually
Zoom.
5 months ago, and I'm still traumatized by it. And there's a lot of computer now in the CSI TV
okay.
shows. There's a lot of looking at computers and stuff. And it is one of the most like ridiculous things that happens. One, it's a totally indiscernible OS.
Right.
It's not Unix. It's not Linux. Unix isn't a thing, right? But Linux.
Yeah,
is.
Unix is. It's,
oh, okay.
it's just on college machines.
Mostly. Oh, okay. Well, then I think I used Unix at UW when I went to school there. You can totally tell it's not a real
right.
OS. Like,
right.
if you made a movie 30 years ago, you could get away with like, well, you don't know every OS.
Right.
But today, everyone knows what an OS, what all the available, the
right.
normal, especially the fact that 99.9% of computers in the United States run on Windows or Apple.
Right. And they sort of do that, I think, a lot of times because they make OSs that are way more graphical and do prettier things.
Well, so that's the other ridiculous part of the CSI. Is like someone would be like, oh my God, I just figured something out. Everyone, come to my computer.
Right.
And all the.
And they go, type, 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 type.
Well, no, they don't even type. They just click a button. And the, this like, I'd have to show it, but this graphic shows up and see, we have this guy and
run a spectrum analyzer on his face. Okay.
Yeah.
Tap, tap. Vroom.
Yeah. And then there's like this scrolling code.
Yeah.
They always have scrolling code,
right.
which of course no OS has scrolling
right.
code.
And then you go, oh, did you see that scroll just by right there?
Yeah.
Yes. It was DF.
And then they're like, and look. This guy, the way his body shape is exactly the body shape of this cutout on this other picture we have. And then
see if they match.
And then, yeah. Well,
tap.
But no, you're messing my story up. They have already pre-done the presentation in the 2 seconds that they had before. And they just press a button and it just like overlays.
Right.
You know what I mean? Anyway, it's hard to describe on a podcast. But anyway, so in this movie, it was really interesting because Anish totally, you know, from the very, from the, I don't know what you call it, the prelude to the movie, where, you know, that early Windows, like, I don't know, 95 opens up.
Right.
And it's, a, you know, it's like Up, the movie Up.
Yeah.
Where the beginning of the movie, it's like you just see this, this very sequence. Fast-paced sequence. Yeah. And this searching had a similar thing.
Oh, I was in tears, man.
Were you?
Oh, yeah. Because I knew where it was going as soon as they did the... Because they show some early tests go wrong.
Right. And medical tests. So it's a beautiful sequence because, again, the whole thing is taking place on a computer and no one's talking. There's no dialogue. It's just like someone's opening up an email.
Oh
someone's moving a folder.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, someone is erasing a user from their computer.
Oh, I was in tears so bad.
Yeah, it was so, you know, it was seamless. You know, it looked very realistic. That was one of the most realistic things in the movie, honestly, is like the way they depicted that whole thing.
I was crying like a baby.
Yeah. You're referring to not making fun of people as crying as it not being a masculine thing, when in fact... True masculinity means you are brave enough to cry. So you're crying
I
like
should a, say it like a barbarian killer.
You were crying like a masculine man.
Yeah.
Like a brave.
Like a gladiator.
Like a courageous masculine man. Yeah, mostly accurate representation of what it actually looks like. Really inventive variation too. Because the other thing was, it's like, oh, okay, so this whole movie is going to take place on a computer screen. This is going to get kind of boring.
Right.
We got Facebook and FaceTime. That's it, right? but they kept it.
It doesn't.
They kept it like, you know, you got Twitter and Facebook and texting and iMessage and Tumblr and YouTube and then security cameras and news sites and Google Maps.
Right.
Like, you know, and like that was another thing. It's like, man, because he was doing functionalities in Google Maps that I didn't know. I knew you could do, but I was like, oh, okay, that's how you do that.
Right. Like pinning the places and things.
Yeah.
So by the way, another thing that the movie made me very happy about is there was something that very, very early on in the movie, I was like, I bet you I know what's going to happen here. And later in the movie, it looked like that's what was happening. Yeah. And I was like, I knew it.
But
I felt really smart.
But then it wasn't that.
And then it wasn't, or it wasn't quite what I thought.
Yeah. Another thing, but that's a classic, you know, thriller.
Well, it is, but a lot of, like, I find with more sloppily made movies with twists, I absolutely see it coming. And then, like, some of the Shyamalan movies that weren't good, I was like, I know right now what you're doing.
Interesting.
And then at the end of the movie, I'm like, yeah, I knew that. Like, that's dumb.
Another really cool thing that I actually just took pleasure in just seeing were old versions of Windows and Facebook and other things.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, oh, yeah, Facebook used to look like that, you know? And that must have been hard, right? You'd have to get some programmer to look at old versions of Facebook and actually like remake the UI of Facebook, you know, that would be kind of hard. But
because the movie took place in 2017, but it was showing us flashbacks all the way back to
before she was born.
Right.
It shows them getting married. Yeah. Right. And them having a kid and then da da da. So yeah, it goes back to the mid-90s, you know. Or late 90s, anyway. But the one thing...
Oh, because I think that was Windows 98, not 95.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the one thing that did bother me about the computer stuff was that the pointer, you know, the cursor on the screen was obviously animated and not an actual person.
Oh, yeah.
This happens all the time in movies. Like, you'll see when they switch to a screen, you'll see the pointer, and it's so clearly that someone...
Instead of, in reality, it'd be jiggling all over the place. Right. And it would be a bad experience for the movie, but it would be more realistic.
I guess it would be bad, but I'm also guessing it's so much easier to just hand it over to a graphics person and say... You know, design the scene and make sure the pointer goes from A to B, instead of saying, "I need you to actually use the mouse yourself."
Right.
The other thing is when even if you were using the mouse, and you know exactly what you're doing, then you're going to do it in a more deliberate way and less less natural.
Well, and there were things. So I actually appreciated it from the storytelling perspective. Because a lot of times in movies where they're doing computer stuff, they skip a lot of steps, right? And this would have really hurt the storytelling because they were very deliberate in me figuring out what the person must be thinking while they're looking at the screen.
Right.
So there were a lot of those moments where they're scrolling through and they're like, oh, that's – like, in fact, there's a moment in the movie, which I'm sure you experienced as well, where the guy's dealing with an interface of a certain site, and at the end of the – he submits his form, and this thank you screen comes up with a picture. And then you're like, oh,
what?
Oh, my – and then – but in a different kind of movie, they would have cut to the face, and but since that doesn't exist, all you see is the picture still on the screen. And then you slowly see the person opening up a thing to see, to verify right. what they think is.
Right.
And yeah. you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Right.
Yeah.
Right. In another movie, you'd switch to John Cho's face right. and he'd be like, huh?
What?
But like, you're in, it's almost like.
First person.
Yeah, you're almost feeling it as yeah. as John Cho himself.
Right.
But yeah, so I thought the pointers were better than other, it was the best version of animated pointers I've seen, but it was still obviously animated pointers, and it was really bugging the crap out of me.
It's funny because
I'm like you got so far, and sure. then you have this really stupid animated pointer thing. It's like just grab a fucking mouse and move the pointer. Okay, so
there was one thing that bugged me. Did we already say, like, I mean, what the inciting incident is the girl goes missing. We mentioned this.
Yeah.
There was one thing that bugged me where he was trying to figure out who were her lab partners for AP Bio. But that part is certainly something he could have called the school and been like, who's in that class? And they would have had, you know, to help him, right? So that one was one that was like unnecessarily difficult for him to find out who's in that study group, because he could have just filtered down to who are the students in her AP Bio class.
I guess. Yeah. But it might have even been faster just to ask the students, you know.
But I mean, he was going through, like, you know, no one knew her, you know. But he knew that he was at an AP Bio study group, because the one guy said, like, yeah, it's AP Bio.
Yeah.
Anyways, it was just a small thing. But just like you got bothered by the mouse, that's the one that bothered me.
And the Excel spreadsheet was pretty cool.
Yeah, right.
And that was another thing. I was like, oh, you can just drop a picture into an Excel right. cell. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So some other bad things was, we basically have already said this, is that the ending, I didn't really, I while I was watching the movie, as the ending was happening, I was like, oh. But then after watching the movie, I thought back on the movie, and I was like, that last, you know, 20% was not ideal.
Okay, from which the way it was done, or the actual story of it?
I guess both, but I think there's a way to even have that story and have it pulled off well. Like, what's her face from Will and Grace?
Yeah,
she's the police officer. I thought her character was really hard to feel.
She didn't pull it off. I don't know if it's her fault or if it's the script part,
right?
Because
or I just am so used to her being Grace and Will and Grace.
Well, I'm not, because I never watched that.
Oh,
but
well,
I knew it was her.
But she, so Deborah Messing.
Deborah Messing.
She plays a very, like, gruff, almost butch police detective.
And I just.
And not funny. Like very, very buttoned up, very professional.
Yeah.
And on TV, she's this gregarious, funny, comedic actress. Right. You know? And then in this, it's like hard to. But so I thought her character was a little weird. The twist.
I felt there was a stereotype of a detective.
Okay. But I just thought that, but I would have put up with that, honestly, because it was like, okay, fine, she's a cop and whatever. But I just felt like not only did the last bit feel a little clunky to me of just like, huh? But also the way, so instead of sticking to John Cho's computer screen, we now are watching like news channels.
Yeah.
And the news channel footage was some of the most unbelievable footage. You know, like, there's a camera. Supposedly there's a news camera that isn't allowed on site, but is somehow zooming in.
Right.
And we see everything we need to see in the screen. You know, we see this thing. We see John Cho. We see this guy. You know, like, everything is captured, and we even see emotion and like storytelling in the screen. And it's like, that's not realistic. And there's another way to tell that without you know, taking me out of the story and being like, okay, now we're in like a cheesy.
It could have been tough to build enough momentum at the end, though, without some action like that. But I hear you. The one that I don't think was done well, I mean, I sort of agree with you, but the one I definitely didn't like was the interrogation room.
Okay.
I thought that was spelling it out way too much.
Right. So again, there's another way to do that.
Yeah.
You know, there's another way.
They literally read out all the words that are not spoken in the script. They're like, okay, now we're going to give you the backstory.
Right.
Right.
Right. And also, another thing that I didn't like about the movie was, so John Cho's lines were all very believable, and I think that's a combination of the writer being able to write well for that character and also...
And maybe relating to that character.
And yeah, and also John Cho's acting ability.
Right.
But when he would call people, the other... It was like I was watching a good actor and a bad actor.
Yeah.
Like he would call someone and he'd be like... So, you know, did you have contact with my daughter?
Oh, like the mom? That was the least believable mom, not his wife. He calls this one mother of a kid that she's supposedly hiking with. Do you remember that?
No.
It's the one where he hears that, I forget the kid's name, but he calls the mother. He's like, hi, I'm, and she's like, oh yeah, I remember. You're such and such's husband. Right. And then he's like, okay, well, I'm just finding out about my daughter's like, well, no, it's probably a reception problem. It's like, and he's like, what? Like, oh, they're hiking. Of course she was invited. Like everything she was saying was so,
right.
Like reading from the script, reading from the script.
Reading from the script. That's a good way to describe it. It's like John Cho was acting and it was like almost everyone else in the movie was reading from from a script.
Right.
And I think now that I think about it, I think part of the problem was that there were so many characters in this movie, like so many voices,
right?
So and who probably weren't being paid very much because they had one line.
Oh,
and so
he didn't have a lot of money to pay a lot of people, right?
Right. Yeah. So he's probably hiring some of the worst actors in L.A. because he needs like he probably needed like a couple hundred
or friends maybe, like,
a couple hundred people who could provide this one line, and you know, he doesn't have enough time to kind of coach them in, and so they probably were literally just reading from a script.
Right. I did think the daughter was good.
Yeah, she was good.
And she didn't have a lot of, but all the little videos that she had.
Yeah, she was she was great too. Yeah, absolutely.
By the way, and this trend, because we just talked about Eighth Grade, and that one had a lot of the filming, you know, the videoing as well. And so like I think we're probably going to see more movies echoing what's happening a lot in society.
Well, that movie with Aubrey Plaza was kind of like that too.
I didn't see that one.
It was pretty good. I can't remember the name.
Okay.
But one of the things that this movie and Eighth Grade also did well along those lines is it'd be so, I don't know, typical or basic to make a movie like this, and the moral of the story would be like, we need to put our phones down and start really connecting.
like the moral of Ready Player One, we need to spend time outside of the oasis.
Yeah, it's like okay, but no one's going to do that, you know, but searching, that's not the message. Right. The message is, this stuff is normal life now.
Yep.
This is how we connect. This is how fathers get a hold of their daughters.
And that's how he found. That's how he solved the thing. In the
right. You could even argue that the amount of social media use that both of them, father and daughter, did saved her.
Right.
You know. Same with Eighth Grade. At no point was the moral of the story that she should put her phone down, or she shouldn't be posting videos on YouTube.
Right.
It was just like that. This is just what people do now. You know. I appreciated that.
Yeah, I agree.
So what's the final word on Searching, Brito?
I really enjoyed it. I want to see it again.
Are you still an 8 out of 10 after
Yeah, just like I said, I mean, maybe over time I'll downgrade it, but experience-wise, it felt like an eight o'clock experience for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say for me, absolutely. The first 80%, I was totally on board, and I was like amazed at like, it's interesting that it could be eye candy. Yeah. It was also, I guess another part of this, the enjoyment is like, oh, I use that app.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I've done that before. Yeah. Oh, I've typed a text and then erased it before sending it. Like, just all these common life things that has never really been depicted well in, like, one of the things that I do every once in a while is I take a screenshot of my phone homepage, you know, of the apps, or I'll take a picture
so that you can remember it.
Yes. Or I'll take a picture of my desktop on my computer because, like, if you look back, like, you know, 10 years ago, you'll be like, oh yeah.
Oh my God.
Or your bookmarks, like take a picture of your bookmarks on your browser. It's a part of life that it just breezes past us, but we don't realize it actually kind of has an emotional thing to us.
So I've actually done that in one way. You know, every now and then I'll be on a text message stream and I'm trying to make some visual points. So I'll go and find an image that means something or a GIF and I'll post it in there, right? But when I'm doing the image, what I usually do is I find the image, save it to photos and then share it. And for a while, I was thinking, like, I should probably go back and delete those because, I mean, why do I need that image in my stream? But then I realized, actually, someday I'm going through and I'm like, oh, I remember when I shared this. And it reminds me of what I was talking about, what was the moment.
Right.
So even though it's some random picture, it has some meaning.
Right.
So it's a little bit like that.
Yeah, these things are just blowing right past us.
Right.
And I don't think we realize the emotional resonance that these things have for us and how in the future our technology sort of landscape will look different.
Right.
Like, I wish I took a screenshot of my very first Facebook page, right?
From, oh my gosh. You know, I wanted to see my MySpace page.
Right. Like, that's just gone. Like, we don't have access. I would just like to look at it just to be like, oh, that's what it looked like, you know?
Right.
Anyway. Well, that does it for that episode of Psychology in Seattle. Tell us what you think of the movie. You can go to our Facebook page and let us know. You can email us at contact@psychologyinseattle.com, or you can comment on wherever you're listening to this. Please take care of yourself and your families and your children, because
you deserve it.